Right. Thank you all for joining us today. Sorry for the late start, just sorting out a couple technical issues there. I want to give a big thank you to Brian Merkling and Cliff Taroney, who will be speaking with me this hour. So Brian is the founder and CEO of Thin Air, and Cliff is the Executive Vice President, Client Success and Strategic Sales at Thin Air. Thin Air's IoT technology integrates both IoT machine data generated by an organization's assets and human insight from its key stakeholders to deliver the only fully intelligent IoT platform that tells you what's happening and what to do about it. This interview is an element of IRI's Digital Transformation Community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. And through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The latest one on BASF is available on our website. A virtual conference dedicated to digital transformation called Digital Futures, and it will be held this October. Facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics, updates with insights and additional resources, and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing right now. These will always take place on the third Thursday of the month from 12 p.m. Eastern. Next month, we will be speaking to Jaap de Vries, Vice President, Innovation and Science and Technology at FM Global. I have a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Cliff and Brian. First, this session is being recorded, and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question in and I will read it out for you, or you can raise your hand using the function on the dashboard and I will unmute you and you can ask your question then. All right, let's go ahead and get started. So Brian, let's start with you. You know, many organizations recognize the need for digital transformation, but they undertake it to stay relevant rather than to accomplish strategic goals. You know, what strategic goals do you see companies trying to accomplish through a digital transformation initiative?
Well, strategically, there are two key digital transformation streams. You're either trying to enhance your customer's experience or you're trying to create a competitive advantage for your organization. Staying relevant is a perfectly acceptable instigator if that's what it takes to get your leadership to move, or if that's what finally opens up a budget for a digital transformation project. I will say the Fortune 500 companies that we work with, though, they're strategic thinkers. So they're constantly looking for ways to both increase their competitive advantage and enhance their customers' experience.
Okay, and staying with you, Brian, so what sustained organizational benefits do digital transformation initiatives create, and how are they accomplished in your perspective from what you've seen with organizations you've partnered with?
Yeah, our largest customers saw digital transformation, and this kind of ties back to my last response a little bit, but they saw it as a way to protect quality and remove costs from common processes. So they were combining some important strategic goals into one initiative. And it's an amazing thing to watch a world-class global operation execute on such an initiative. And now they've progressed to the point where operational excellence includes a digital transformation organization with VP level roles on down. And most importantly, they have budget.
Yes, we all know how important that is. So moving over to you, Cliff, you know, in many cases, companies think digital transformation is all about the technology and the data. In what ways can a company cultivate a culture of broad stakeholder input to see the change through to success? And how can you cultivate a culture of feedback to continuously inform your digital transformation strategy?
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Thanks for having us here today. There's a lot to unpack there, and there's in many ways that companies can use different strategies to engage their broad stakeholder base. And where we see some of the real strong successes are when companies take both a bottom-up and a top-down approach, meaning that leaders are communicating the importance of digital transformation initiatives, but at the same time that companies and clients of ours are actually tapping into the voice of their different associate base, whether that's frontline workers, administrative staff, and doing so in a way that employees really feel like their voice has been heard. And it's one thing just to collect that feedback. It's another thing to actually understand what are the common themes across it, and then to act on it, of course, but then also to communicate back out to the associate base what are the changes that have been made as a result of the feedback that has come in. And so, you know, with each turn and pass that a company can do that, you build up a little bit more confidence and excitement and energy from the associate base on that the initiatives that the company wants to take are actually taking hold and being almost like sort of this grassroots effort. And so it's really important to show those results. The other thing too is when you think about the hidden plan, and really there's a lot of complexity when it comes to a lack of tech integration across different systems. And you have workers who are basically running, and especially in the manufacturing space, are running their operations on basic spreadsheets, and they've created these spreadsheets to overcome limitations with some of the formal technology. One of the key things that you can do there is to really shorten that feedback loop. And there's this whole problem of a pending skilled manufacturing workforce nearing retirement. And so those workers have a lot of information in their brains about how processes work, about how systems work, about when machines might fail. And when you can combine the machine-generated data with human-based feedback, you get a complete 360-degree view of your operations. And so for that skilled manufacturing worker who is about to retire, and they know that a machine is going to fail, or if it does fail, why it failed, because they've been working on it for 30 years, capturing that tacit knowledge and making it really explicit through micro bits of feedback is critical to the sustained success of a company. And so, you know, looking at just technology is great and how we collect that. I know we're going to talk a little bit about what you can do with some of the analytics, but being able to look not only at data, but also tap into the voice of the associate base is just as key as using cutting edge technology.
Yeah, that's a huge issue that our members have been talking about, the impending retirement tsunami. But it seems to have been building for the last decade, but it's going to crash soon, and people are very concerned about making sure that they have that continuity, especially if we've all made the leap to remote working in a lot of cases. So you don't get that face-to-face time that people are used to having.
Yeah, absolutely. And just being able to document that, to understand that. And once you have that information, you can do a lot of powerful things when it comes to knowledge management, frontline worker enablement, technology-assisted training. So it does open up a whole host of other opportunities if you can capture that knowledge and really create that sense of trust across the associate base that their insights are being used collectively to really help drive forward the business in a meaningful way on really important issues, like you said there, on the pending skilled manufacturing workforce nearing retirement.
Yeah, that's huge. So another key issue that our members are looking at, particularly with regard to digital transformation, is developing their partnership ecosystem. And that's definitely part of the reason that I invited you and Brian here today, because, you know, we like to hear from, you know, members who've had successful partnerships, but we want to get that at the other side. You know, what is it like from the partner's perspective? So, you know, what do you think is the most important part of a successful partnership, and what do your best relationships look like?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There are a lot of different options out there for clients to work with, for providers to work with. And yeah, I think if you boil it down, that there's probably a combination of a few. The first is transparency, and that goes both for the company that wants to reap the benefits of such technology and services, and it also holds true for the partner or the vendor that is providing it. And that transparency is around everything from price, to services, to the relationship that you know you build. So having a transparent and open communication, I think, is key. The second one is working on something special, right? And so we're all focused on our day-to-day jobs. Everything's very, very busy. And I think that when you can take a step back and really, really feel part of a bigger solution here, whether you're in financial services, manufacturing, healthcare, I think that creates a special bond between a vendor and a client. And I'll give you an example. One of our clients, we're actually doing some really cool work with. They are a nonprofit, and they want to use sensors and feedback, basically deployed in sub-Saharan Africa, to route oxygen tanks more efficiently to medical providers and to patients that need it. And so while that's a really strong social mission in that case, we can work with, you know, anyone can work with any company, and you can find that sort of special case together, whether that's increasing uptime of your machines, increasing throughput of your operations, saving a lot of money over here, contributing to something. So I think identifying what that special project is that you're both working on is really, really important to the success of that partnership between the company and the vendor. So that's the second one. And the third one is, we all like to talk about being disruptive and sort of boiling the ocean. I think that it's completely fine to start small. So know that you can start by crawling, and then you can lead to a walk, and then eventually go to a run. I think those three elements are really what makes a partnership successful, and that for any IRI member or any company that wants to use the services of a vendor, they should look for transparency. They should work on something special and identify what that is, however they want to define that for what their business goals are. And thirdly, they should feel completely okay to start small.
Okay. And I don't know if you or Brian want to take this one, but you know, along similar lines, we see a lot of our members really struggling to get a handle on the ever-changing landscape of different technology providers and potential partners, and just all the technology that's available that is literally changing almost every day, it feels like. So what suggestions do you guys have for navigating this?
Well, I can start, and Cliff can certainly jump in, but there are two keys that we see in this space, because there is substantial change, and the velocity of that change is increasing. I think there are two keys. One is a platform. So choose a platform that can survive changes in your organization and changes in the industry. And the second piece that kind of makes that possible is make sure you're not tied to any one sensor company, any one human a feedback approach. Make sure that your platform is data source agnostic. And then if you've done that, and if you have the right platform in place, you can scale, you can contract, you can change the endpoints that feed into that platform, and you can change the endpoints that platform feeds. So to me, those are two keys. Just assume and kind of plan for the fact that their change isn't going away in this space. You know, a few years ago, sensors were $50 to $100 each, and there were a handful of companies out there making them. Today, there are 200 billion connected devices out there, and you need to have a platform and an approach to your data source that allows you to adapt as these changes continue to come. Cliff, anything you would want to add to that?
No, I think that was great. The only thing I would say is that, to Brian, just to build on Brian's point, that choosing a platform that can scale, because there are so many different use cases that come up, and there's this, of course, this notion that you don't know what you don't know as a company that wants to implement a digital transformation solution. You may start with something here, but in 6 months or a year from now, 10 other fringe use cases come up that you want to address. And so being able to have that flexibility through a technology provider is absolutely key, because your future self doesn't always know what your present self knows right now. And so being able to scale up with a technology provider that can offer sensors or technology in a very scalable, agile way is definitely key.
And that goes along with your starting small edict as well. That it yeah, that does make sense because you can always get bigger.
Right.
So keeping with you, Cliff, so moving over to data, which is, I know, a big issue for our members, you know, data governance is definitely a hot topic. So data is only as good as the actions you can take against it. So what are companies, you know, how are companies using insights derived from their data to make these changes?
Yeah, that's a good question, Lee. And, you know, when you think about data, it can come from a variety of sources. In many cases, the technology systems are not always connected. And so there's this sort of gap between being able to collect data, which is becoming very, very easy, you know, with each day that passes. And there's a gap then with, well, now that you have that information, what do you do with it? And so companies just don't have the time always to analyze mounds and mounds of data, let alone act on it. So, you know, when you think about data, there are a number of things that companies can do to really, really harness the power of it. They have to have a team, either internal or external, that is constantly looking at the different sources of information. And there are some really sophisticated techniques that companies can be using to derive those meaningful insights and take action against it. And so we talked a little bit before about collecting human-based feedback. That's one really, really key example of how we're seeing companies take advantage of a non-traditional data source, but using it in really, really powerful ways. And I'll give you an example of exactly what that means. So imagine a piece of equipment fails, and there are sensors on that to be able to identify that a piece of equipment has gone down. Capturing that human feedback and having someone actually say and type into a system or report back in some fashion, this machine failed because of A, B, and C, or perhaps they're even taking photos and videos of that content to log what went on. That's what many people know as unstructured data. And so being able to combine the data that you get from an actual machine and marry that with human-based input becomes really powerful and critical to the successful operations of a company. And when you know, that's just in the case of one employee. And so when you scale that feedback, that those comments, those photos, those videos across hundreds or thousands of employees, you really have to have and use sophisticated techniques to discern and understand what patterns there might be in all of that unstructured data. And that's where things like natural language processing come into play, machine learning and algorithms that can categorically process and analyze all this unstructured data that's coming in, thematize it, and then be able to report back to the business unit very specific key themes that are happening based on all this unstructured data that's coming in the form of qualitative comments from employees or photos and videos in terms of pattern recognition. And so that's where the power of data, and it sort of goes back to what we were talking about before with being able to take all that tacit knowledge that's in employees' minds and make it explicit, you then have to understand it. And using some really, really great techniques like natural language processing is one of a number of ways that companies can do that to take advantage of it and then actually drive change throughout their organization versus just sitting on mounds and mounds of data.
Okay. So Brian, you kind of shifting gears. That's a lot to process, Cliff.
Yeah, no, well, I'm a data geek at heart. I apologize.
No, it's good. And it's such a huge issue that it's very difficult to tame. So, you know, Brian, you know, this is one of the big challenges, but what are some of the other big challenges that you've been seeing legacy companies work on and hopefully overcome?
Well, I think the key term there is legacy. So that's kind of the key term that you mentioned. If you think about it, if you were launching a brand new global manufacturing, CPG, financial service, automotive company, and I only use those industries as examples, this would apply to any company in any industry. But if you were launching a brand new global organization, you would never create a brand new national global operation where paper is an acceptable trail through the manufacturing process. You would never consider having most or all of your processes dark, and running machines on the manufacturing floor to failure would never be an acceptable starting point. You'd start with predictive failure analytics, and you'd ensure you had insights across the processes that ensured you were operating at the highest levels of efficiency. But for some reason, in a legacy environment, because it's always been done this way, that is a very difficult thing to overcome. It's a difficult challenge. Nobody in these companies is saying that their processes are necessarily right. They're just saying it's always been done this way and change is hard. So I think legacy and it's always been done this way is the biggest challenges to overcome.
Yeah, definitely. Overcoming the "we've always done it this way" mentality is a real struggle. We found that in our, I think it was our Michelin case study. That was the first one that we did, and it was, almost 2 years ago now. We found that their chief digital officer, Eric Chanio, basically said that he had mentally divided the staff into people he knew were going to be willing to take on new ideas, people who with a bit of cajoling would probably do it, and then those who it was just never going to happen. And, you know, basically just said, okay, for those it's not going to happen, we're just going to leave you behind and we're going to keep moving. But
that's an interesting approach.
I'm glad that it was written in the case study, so I'm not talking out of turn, because it's quite a bold move, and maybe I'm misinterpreting that, but because it was 2 years ago that we did it, but it was something along those lines, you know, just accepting that there are some people who won't be willing to come along, and just okay, that we're going to focus on the people who are going to be excited or could at least be convinced.
Yeah, and it's amazing the level of losses that companies, whether it's in shrinkage or just wasted fees, wasted labor costs for bad processes and bottlenecks. It's amazing how companies will just continue to power through with that when the technology is here and the data is available for you to correct it. And like I said, you'd never think of building a company like that today, now that this technology is available, but bringing it into operations that already exist, it can be a challenge.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, even just small things that we do every day, I find, you know, it's easier just to keep doing them in the same way, you know, the copy and the paste and the many spreadsheets than to learn the new techniques and to learn, but until you're actually forced to do it, you just kind of carry on as you are, unless it's some exciting new technology you really want to try.
Right.
So staying with you, Brian, you know, embarking on a digital transformation initiative, it sounds really exciting, but it's also, you know, super difficult. So, you know, between getting leadership buy-in and demonstrating the business case, et cetera, you know, what strategies can companies take to walk, crawl, run, to incrementally prove out the value in their investment and show demonstrable ROI?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I'm going to not contradict, but layer on something Cliff said earlier. The key in my opinion and what we're seeing is to create a starter program or a proof of concept that includes proof points across the entire digital transformation journey. And what I mean by that is digital transformation, it's not just putting a sensor on a machine, but that's what most proof of concepts, that's what most kind of early projects look like. It can certainly be about putting a sensor on a machine, on an asset, or on your raw materials, but it's also capturing human feedback and combining that data. It's about analyzing that data, and ultimately, it's about the new business insights that this new class of data that digital transformation creates. We need to get to that quicker. And so I would say project number one should show the value of this new class of business insights. And perhaps I should simplify that and tie it back to your question and even to one of Cliff's comments. I'd say crawling when it comes to digital transformation probably should look like a slow controlled walk that includes business insights. It's really, really important to show the ROI, to show the business value that you're generating on the other end. This is a new day. This is a new age where we have an entirely new class of data, and it can be captured from people you already employ. It can be captured from machines that are already in place by putting small, inexpensive sensors on it. So it's a new day and a new time to try the technology, but show its value even in the very first project.
So what kind of ROI do you typically use, or metrics, ROI metrics do you typically use?
In digital transformation, in IoT, kind of in this area, there's so many soft ROIs out there. What we've seen is you really need to get to the hard ROIs. So how much can I take out of my expenses because I can find things faster, because I know where they are, because I know where they go. What can I change in the business after I've identified bottlenecks? If I move from running to failure and move to predictive failure analytics and prescriptive analytics, what does that do for my, how fast can we burn down the backlog? You know, can we get to revenue X% faster? So we try to jump right to hard dollar ROIs. And, you know, especially if you're working with a really large Fortune 500 company, there could be tens of millions of dollars in losses from inefficient processes and from shrinkage. And even if you find a lot of the things at a later date that you lost in the beginning, you still spent the money to circle back and find those things. You still spent the money for the things that you weren't able to locate. You still spent the money with your suppliers to replace those things. So there's hard dollar ROIs kind of up and down the chain that we try to grab onto right away. And we've got some great customers that are reporting some, 14, 30 to $30 million annually being recovered or realized from implementing digital transformation.
That's impressive. So actually that follows on nicely to my next question, Brian, which is about, the biggest successes you've seen. What are some fun examples that we can hear about?
So I think if I were to say, I think analytics and the business insights are key to it. I think couple of fun anecdotes from the industry we've seen. We have a dashboard we use, and this isn't meant to be a plug for us, a shameless plug for us, but we have a dashboard that will show not only the location of things, but it shows the route things take, and then we can run analytics on those and help companies understand where bottlenecks take place in the manufacturing process. But the very first customer we launched analytics for, they brought up their what we call breadcrumb trail for assets that, or I'm sorry, raw materials going through the manufacturing process. And in 5 seconds, they were able to see raw materials going into areas that weren't environmentally controlled, where they are not allowed to go, that impacts quality. So to take all of this work that went into deploying the infrastructure to tagging things, to creating the data structure, to creating the analytic, the plan around the analytics, but to have a dashboard show value in about 5 seconds. It was one of my favorite stories we've had over the last couple of years.
Oh, that's great. And Cliff, do you have any big success stories that that you like to share?
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly a good one. I'm just thinking through here what some of them, there's a few good ones to choose from. I think one of my favorites is working with a Fortune 100 consumer packaged goods company on helping them to essentially deconstruct and repackage their go-to-market product innovation pipeline. And when you think about all the different initiatives and all the different plants and suppliers and manufacturers that a large company like this has, being able to really tap into associate voice, collect that feedback and use it for a force for good and a power for good is really, really special. And to Brian's point, I couldn't agree more that it's not just about collecting data, it's about showing the value. And I think that the more that, you know, when you can humanize what you're doing by showing back to the associate base changes that are made as a result of feedback that has come in from them directly, you see the light bulb go off and you see that trust built in the company, and you see some really powerful things happen, like improved processes and really, really strong energy and vigor around training and deploying new processes and trying new initiatives. So that's one of my favorites.
All right. And you know, before we open the floor to questions from the audience here, you know, I'd like to hear from both of you. You know, what recommendations do you have for companies on their digital transformation journey? You know, from working with partners to data governance, we'd love to hear from your perspective. You know, having worked with lots of different legacy companies, you know, what are you seeing that works well?
Well, you open up a whole new can there of around data governance. That's absolutely key, and it drives to one of them. So I think there are two keys. And the first one is get to the business insights. So get to the analytics, get to the business insights early. That's how you'll drive adoption up and down your organization. And the second thing I would say, don't forget the human aspect of digital transformation. So business processes are not only made up of machines and things. People are involved, and people are who you need to adopt this technology. So don't forget the human aspect. Cliff, what would you add?
Yeah, I would say a layer on top of that, there's three things. There's the scalability of the technology that Brian already talked about, right? And being able to use that technology in a number of different use cases. The second one is being able to have analytic insights. And the third is a comprehensive change management approach. And you don't have to do all three of those, Lee. I don't think when you're starting with a pilot, like you're not going to boil the ocean in a 1 or 2 or 3 month pilot, right? But when you talk about true digital transformation, it has to have scalable technology. It has to have business insights, and it has to have a really comprehensive plan that can ensure adoption of new technology and ensure that associates are getting the value out of it. So I think those three things are really, really key for any company that wants to embark on a true disruptive and enterprise-wide digital transformation initiative.
Excellent, thank you. So we're now open for questions from the audience. Again, if you'd like to put up your hand using that function on the dashboard, I'll go ahead and unmute you, or you can type your question into the chat and I'll go ahead and read it out for you. While we wait for those to come in, you know, getting back to the kind of the knowledge management and knowledge transfer issue that we talked about earlier in the conversation, you know, What kind of initiatives are you seeing from people? Are people starting to recognize the challenges there? And are the initiatives that they're doing kind of directed specifically at that? Or is that kind of a happy side effect that they're seeing?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I'll give you an example. One of our one of the clients we work with, they're a global car manufacturer, and they want to understand, in essence, as cars come in to be serviced, capturing that technician knowledge about what is fundamentally wrong with the car. And this isn't for something very, very simple and basic, like an oil change. This is for something like a really, really challenging problem. Having that information then route to the appropriate quality assurance folks, those quality assurance folks know what quality information on the submission of a vehicle looks like, right? But a lot of that is, Lee, that tacit knowledge that's been stuck in their brains for 20, 30 years. And if they know it, they can see it and they can act on it. But when they retire, that becomes a major systemic problem. And so being able to capture the feedback of that quality assurance professional to say, this is quality, this isn't quality, that becomes institutional gold that a company can then mine and then build, things like algorithms around. This is something that we do, in working with clients, build algorithms around to be able to process at scale what quality looks like in this case. And you're in a sense institutionalizing the collective brains of all these great workers that have such knowledge in their minds and making it much more explicit. That is a really, really interesting and intriguing field of balancing technology with this humanized approach to it. Especially when, we talk about analytics and all the things it can do in this case around knowledge management, technology assisted training, and certainly frontline worker enablement.
Awesome. So I'm not seeing any questions coming in. Clearly we've answered all the questions. We anticipated everyone's needs here. So I'm going to go ahead and say a big thank you to Brian and Cliff for joining us today and taking time out to answer our questions and to give us the partner's perspective on all this. And I'd just like to remind everyone to join us on February 18th, where we'll be talking to Jaap de Vries from FM Global. But in the meantime, have a great month. And again, thank you, Brian and Cliff, for taking the time today.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us, Lee.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Bye.